tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 5th of February 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I want to take a look at the Church of England. We haven't looked at the Church of England for a while. They used to regularly appear in our podcasts a couple of years back. We even had a section on the website devoted to it. That, of course, was when we had Justin Welby as the Archbishop of Canterbury. I believe we now have a woman Archbishop of Canterbury, which I am sure will cause the church to lose even more parishioners than it already has. The more the church goes against biblical traditions, the more it loses its support. And today I want to talk about a politicised imperative that the church has been given. And I'm taking this from GB News. The headline is Church of England clergy instructed to give anti-racist sermons in £730,000 diversity push. So that's £750,000 that the Church of England are being given in exchange for pushing political ideas in their sermons. Now, aren't we supposed to have a separation between church and state? And yet what we have here is the state telling the church what they need to put into their sermons. And what would they say if the church was to start telling the state what the state should do, that it should start obeying biblical principles? Well, the church would be accused of hate speech, wouldn't it? And for interfering in politics. But when it happens the other way around, well, that's absolutely fine. The Diocese of London has secured £730,000 in funding for a new diversity initiative that will encourage clergy to incorporate anti-racism themes into their sermons. Well, the whole idea of racism is a modern idea. I mean, it is only natural that you will prefer the company of your own family, and you will think that your own family is the best family. That's only the natural way that people think. It's only today that we say that it's wrong to think in those terms. It's wrong to put the interests and needs of your own family above the needs of other people's families. It's only today that we say that that's racism and that's wrong. I mean, the Bible says that that's exactly what you should be doing. When Jesus referred to love thy neighbour as thyself, he was actually quoting from an Old Testament verse, which also says to love thy neighbour as thyself. And it tells you who thy neighbour is. It tells you that it is the children of thy people. So it's saying it's the people that are related to you. It means love thy neighbour means love thy ethnic group. And we're told that that's the way that you serve God. So it's effectively saying the way that you serve God is to love your own ethnic group. So there really should be no contradiction between being a nationalist and being a Christian, because as a Christian, you are commanded to be a nationalist, an ethno-nationalist. You're told that you should be loving your ethnic group, and that's the way that you serve God. So I have difficulty with people that say, which is more important, loving your race or loving God? Because if you love God and you want to serve God, then that's the way that you serve God, is by loving your race, loving your ethnic group. But of course, the Church of England has drifted far away from the original biblical instruction, so far away from biblical instruction that they're now encouraging political instruction. The three-year Racial Justice Priority Project, financed by the Church Commissioners, will operate across 400 parishes spanning 18 boroughs situated north of the River Thames. The scheme arrives amidst growing unease that the Church of England is driving away its congregation by concentrating on matters such as slavery rather than traditional pastoral concerns. And this follows on from the news report, or a survey that was carried out last week, where something like 60-65% of churchgoers, I mean it may have been more than that, said that they would not donate to the Church of England if the Church of England was to start paying out slavery reparations. And the church said that it wanted to give out a certain amount of money as slavery reparations, but the people that were surveyed said, well, no, the money that's given to the church should go locally. It should go to helping the people that live there. It should go to the upkeep of the church. It certainly shouldn't be given to the descendants of black people who were slaves, might have been slaves 300 years ago. I mean, white people were slaves as well, don't forget. The term slave itself is a corruption of the word Slav. Slavs are obviously white. Anglo-Saxons, well, the Welsh were enslaved by the Anglo-Saxons. The Anglo-Saxons were enslaved by the Normans. There isn't a people in the history of the world that hasn't been enslaved at some point. And in actual fact, it was Britain, who was a Christian country at the time, that did away with slavery. And yet we're being told that we should see white people as terrible people because they enslaved black people. And another point to bear in mind is that there was the Arab slave trade, and the Arabs would enslave the sub-Saharan Africans as well, but the Arabs would castrate them first because they didn't want them interbreeding with the Arab people. So that the Arabs would castrate them, and then they would transport them across the Sahara and to their consumers. Whereas white people, when we enslaved black Africans, we purchased black Africans, and at the same time we also purchased black women. And we said it was not right that a black slave, a black male slave, should be on his own. He should have a wife with him. And we provided wives for them. And we purchased black females as well as black males so that there were wives. And that's the complete opposite of what the Arabs did. Instead of bringing them wives, they castrated them. So I think that there shows you who was the more beneficent slave master, who was the one that was more concerned about their slaves. It's quite clearly white people, and in the end it was white people that did away with slavery. So this idea that we should be paying slavery reparations to descendants of slaves means that reparations should go to everyone. And the reason why there are these differences in life outcomes is because there are biological differences between ethnic groups, biological differences which can be reflected in things such as average IQ. And if you have a higher average IQ, then you're going to have a better life outcomes. You're going to have you're going to earn better money. You're going to be less likely to go to jail. You're going to be able to build a functioning civilization. If you have a lower average IQ, we see that places that have a lower average IQ never built a civilization. And you can't say that, oh, it was racism throughout the last 3,000 years that prevented Africans from building a civilization. It was simply because Africans were never intended to build civilizations. They have different ways of living. If you were to put a white man in the bush in Africa, the white man would find it difficult to survive, but the black man would be able to survive, even though he has a much lower IQ, because that's the environment that the black man is supposed to survive in. He doesn't need that higher IQ. White people have a higher IQ because we're intended to survive in an environment of civilization that we actually build for ourselves. It's got nothing to do with racism, why we have these disparities, these differences in life outcomes. It's because due to biological differences. I believe that's what we can learn from looking at the studies. I do recommend people read Professor Edward Dutton's work on the subject. He's got a very good book on race, which collates all the latest data on race differences. It's not racism, it's racial differences which cause these disparities. But the church is seeking to make up for these disparities. And of course, they never can actually make up for them. I mean, they could give out a lot of money, but I still think black people would be in the same position that they're in today, further on down the line. Educational programs in churches and Church of England schools will receive support to explore the historical connections between church buildings and the transatlantic slave trade. And this is because the church, 300 years ago, invested its funds, because it says in the Bible that you should invest your funds. There's a little parable story where everybody's given the same amount of money and one person just buries the money and he hasn't increased that money. He hasn't used it to invest in things. He hasn't helped people out with that money, helped businesses out. Somebody else does invest the money and there's an increase on the money when he comes back. And that's the parable, that if you've got skill set, you should use that skill set. So what the church did when it had money, it invested money in areas that were likely to provide a good income stream back. I mean, they would have been negligent if they hadn't invested that money in areas that were likely to bring a high investment back. And so they invested in some of these companies, and part of the produce that these companies were trading in was slaves. And that wasn't because the church was inherently evil. It was because the church was doing the right thing and investing in something that it saw as likely to bring back a good amount of money on that investment. And also, I think it shows that the transatlantic slave trade, it can't really have been that awful if the church was willing to invest in it. I mean, the black slaves, the conditions that they lived in when they were in America, when they were picking fruit and working on the farm and picking cotton, the conditions that they had were relatively decent. They had housing. They had a little plot that they could grow their crops on. The slave master would provide their clothes. They would provide them health care. They would provide for them when they were too old to work. They would provide a creche for them. They would teach them. They had all of these things that they were actually doing for them. And that was the rule. You get exceptions to the rule. And the people that would treat their slaves badly were the exceptions to the rule. And I'm not saying this just off the top of my head. I've read quite a large number of eyewitness reports at the time of slavery, both pro and anti, and the general norm was that these slaves were treated rather well. And I think the reason what the fact that the church invested in it is further evidence that these slaves were generally not mistreated. If they were being mistreated, the church would not have invested in it, because the church would not have been wanting to be seen to have anything to do with anything like that. I mean, the slaves also had their own priests, their own churchmen would come and visit these slaves and teach them about Christianity. So it can't be that they saw what they were doing as being wrong. I mean, it gives instructions in the Bible how a master should treat a slave and how a slave should treat a master. And that was because that was the system of employment in the ancient times. You didn't have people that were paid money that could go to the shop. You had a wealthy landowner that could afford to pay for the upkeep of others, and the others that would live on their land, they would do the manual labour for them, and in return they would get a roof over their heads and they would get their food. I mean, it's exactly the same today. People go out to work. In exchange, they have a roof over their heads, they have food, they have what they need. It's just that they get given tokens in exchange for doing the work, and then they can choose what house they want to live in, or choose the clothes that they want, or choose the car that they want, rather than it just being given to them by somebody. So you have more of a choice nowadays, but that's the only difference. People still need to work to earn their keep, and that's essentially what was happening with the slave trade. And I think that the fact that the church was investing in it, it doesn't show that the church was inherently evil. It shows that the church thought that the slave trade wasn't inherently evil, and that the church must have been satisfied that the slaves were not being mistreated. And I mean, they say, well, a lot of them died on the journey over there to America. I think most of those ships happened to be owned by Jews. And the church would have seen what the condition of these slaves were when they were in Africa, and would have then compared that to the condition that they were in Africa. And they were far, far better off going to America than being stuck in Africa. If you were a black slave in Africa and you were owned by another black African, the chances were you could be eaten by that black African, you could be used for a ritual human sacrifice, they were mistreated. They had no laws in Africa of how to treat a slave, whereas there were laws in America of how to treat a slave. As I say, you had the Bible there, which said that this is the way that you should treat a slave. They had none of that in Africa. They would abuse the slaves in Africa. They would treat them like dirt. Whereas in America, often these farmers would treat the slaves as if they were members of their own family. And the slaves themselves would look upon the leader of the household as if he was their father. And there are lots of reports of this happening. Reports that were written at the time when this was happening, eyewitness reports. And that is what the Church of England would have seen. And they would have said, well, these people are much better off going to America and being owned by Americans than staying in Africa. So I think they would have seen it, that it was quite moral to invest in this, because it meant that these Africans that got taken to America had a much better life than the ones that were in Africa. But of course, you don't get told that today. You don't get told this opposite view. We're not allowed to have a plurality of views on things in the modern age. We have to just stick to the establishment narrative. Getting back to the article here, places of worship will additionally be allocated resources to assist refugees and asylum seekers, whilst being expected to advance diversity within leadership positions. So what they're saying here is the people that are more likely to rape and sexually assault the indigenous British people must be allocated extra resources, and the white people that are in leadership positions must be replaced by non-white people. I mean, that's another way of just repeating this paragraph, isn't it? I mean, they're saying more resources need to go to refugees and asylum seekers, and we need more diversity within leadership positions. The Right Reverend Dr. Anderson Jeremiah, Bishop of Edmonton and the diocese's lead figure on racial justice, claimed the initiative would create a sense of belonging for all. I think it's more likely to provide a sense of exclusion for white people when they see that all the leadership positions in the church are being taken over by brown people, and when they see that all the funds are being directed towards illegal immigrants rather than being directed to them, I think the parishioners are going to feel a sense of exclusion rather than a sense of belonging for all. Whether it's Bible studies, baptismal preparations, confirmation preparations, or sermons, what we would like to actively promote is racial justice as one of the ways of engaging with the challenges of the church through resources that can be used in these spaces, he told The Guardian. Well, racial justice is specifically a left-wing political idea that there has been injustice carried out between one race and another race. That's a political idea, and politics should have nothing to do with the church. The church should be preaching the Bible. It should be preaching the message from the Bible, not preaching modern left-wing communist messages. I mean, what did the communists do to the churchmen? Well, they killed all the churchmen, and they destroyed the churches, and they turned them into cinemas and secular things. They destroyed the church, and they murdered the churchmen. And the same political movement today, it became cultural racism. Cultural Marxism, sorry. Originally it was Marxism, then it became cultural Marxism, and cultural Marxism, one of the offshoots from that, is the idea of racial justice and white guilt and white privilege and everything that goes along with that. So it just shows that the church has been captured, really, by the enemies of the church. Lisa Ajay, who heads the RJP for the diocese, confirmed that unconscious bias training for parochial parish councils would be theologically informed. Unconscious bias training. That's when they're saying that if you are concerned, if your instincts are telling you that you should avoid having anything to do with this person, well, that's an unconscious bias and you should ignore those instincts and you should have as much to do with this person as possible. And of course, that's very dangerous advice when you're talking about illegal immigrants. When you're talking about women who may have an instinct that this person it presents a threat to them, but they've been taught that this is an unconscious bias and that they should ignore that because the end result of that could be that the woman ends up raped, sexually assaulted, or murdered. This comes back to our theology, to who we are as the church, which is about loving our neighbour, she explained. Well, she clearly hasn't read the Bible, then, has she, if she thinks that loving your neighbour means anybody else other than your own ethnic group. Miss Ajay added, whether the far right were present or not, we would still have an intention to care for the asylum seeker, the refugee and the migrant. And this gets talked about a lot. People will try and claim that Jesus was an asylum seeker because he went to Egypt. Well, Jesus was white, Judea was white, and the country next door was white, Egypt. Jesus going to Egypt and claiming asylum there is like somebody going from France to Germany and claiming asylum there. It's not like somebody travelling halfway across the world to do that. I mean, it's beyond belief, really, that the church will stretch things so far and change things from loving your own ethnicity to loving people from the other side of the world that are actually more likely to rape and murder you. She continued, what we want to do is allow people to see that faith and racial justice live side by side. Well, I say racial justice is unbiblical, isn't it? It's got nothing to do with faith. The racial justice priority scheme operates separately from the contentious £100 million Project Spire Fund, established to address the church's historical ties to transatlantic slavery. The church should be pointing out what I pointed out earlier, that they would not have invested in it if they thought that it was an evil thing or that these people were being mistreated. We may look at it today with today's morals and say, well, they were being mistreated because they didn't have the freedoms that we have today. But those freedoms weren't a thing back then. It was the lesser of two evils was to take these people to America rather than to leave them in the hands of Congolese slave traders. It was the lesser of two evils to take them to America. And I think that's why the church didn't mind investing in these things. You can't look at it today and say, well, this was wrong because we have different morals today and we see everybody as all being equal today. They didn't back then. The Bible doesn't tell you that everybody is equal either. It tells you that there are different nations in the world and God created the nations and God created the boundaries between them. And what do we do today? We knock down all the boundaries and everything is out of its place. That initiative, the slavery initiative, championed by former Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, emerged following revelations that a fund created by Queen Anne in 1704 to support impoverished clergy had invested in African chattel slavery. Well, as I say, quite clearly, they thought that African chattel slavery in America was much better than African chattel slavery in Africa. Critics have argued it is wrong to try and justify diverting £100 million when congregations across Britain face severe financial pressures, with approximately 3,500 churches having shut their doors over the past decade. Well, that's quite correct. We're even seeing churches that are being turned into mosques, and churches that are being sold off. We even have organisations now that try to keep churches going, even when there's no congregation. Why is there no congregation? Because the church has turned its back on traditions. That's the simple answer. Because you should have more people going to church now and more people identifying with Christianity, because we see people that have different religions that are around us now, which we didn't before. The only reason we don't have more people being Christian is because our establishment church has turned its back on all the Christian teachings and just promotes the same multi-culty nonsense as the government does. Conservative MPs and peers urged Dame Sarah Mullally, the incoming Archbishop of Canterbury, to abandon the reparations scheme last month, contending that the funds may legally only be directed towards churches and clergy salaries. A survey conducted by Merlin Strategy earlier this month revealed that 61% of Anglican churchgoers would divert their donations to alternative charities should the church commissioners allocate funds towards reparations. See, the church is threatening to give all this money out, £100 million, to black people. The poll of 500 Anglicans found an overwhelming 81% believed church finances ought to support local parishes, while merely 19% considered reparations a priority. And that's probably the 19% of the church that is of African heritage that considered it a priority. Mr. Welby had previously expressed his regret over the church's connections to the slave trade, stating, "I am deeply sorry for the links with transatlantic chattel slavery. That some within the church actively supported and profited from it is a source of shame." Well, he's effectively saying that the Bible is a source of shame to him, isn't it? Because, as I say, because the Bible does condone slavery and it gives laws on the way that slaves should treat their masters and the way that masters should treat their slaves. Yet, according to Welby here, it's a source of shame. So he is effectively saying the Bible itself is a source of shame to him, and that the church today knows better than the Bible, knows better than God. I mean, that's the height of idolatry, isn't it, really, to say that the church today knows better than God, who supposedly inspired the Bible, and it's called the Word of God. So they're saying that the modern day church is better than the Word of God, and the Word of God is an embarrassment to them. Well, this is why the church has hardly anybody still in it. This is why these churches are falling apart and nobody's going there, is because the church has abandoned its core teachings. A policy exchange report from last February concluded that the reparations proposal was historically uninformed and potentially lacked legal justification. Well, it is historically uninformed. So much of today is historically uninformed. If you want to know the truth about something that happened in history, you really have to go back and have a look at the eyewitness reports that were written at that time. And regardless of what your political views are, these eyewitness reports at the time, they have to be accorded more weight than anything else, especially if they were uncontested. And of course, the reports that we do have about slavery, there was a pro and an anti argument. So you need to read both of those arguments, and you need to read what the pro-slavery people were saying and what the anti-slavery people were saying, so that you get a balanced view on it. You can't just look at what black history professors have to say about it today, 300 years later. You need to look at what people were saying about it at the time, and you need to compare it. You need to compare the treatment that the slaves got in America with the treatment that the slaves got in Africa. We have quite a few Albion narrations on the slavery period, if I remember rightly. We have a good one that's on Congolese slavery, which was written by an eyewitness who saw all of this that was going on, and he was a churchman, and he was horrified by the way that the Congolese slave masters were treating their black slaves. And we also have reports from America, again written by religious men at the time, that were preaching to the slaves that were owned by the white farmers. And both of those will give you an idea of the difference between slavery that existed in Africa and the slavery that existed in America. And if you look at those two reports, you have to admit that slavery in America was far more civilized than in Africa. And the black Africans that went to America as slaves were far better off than the black Africans that were left back in Africa. I mean, you really couldn't read those two reports and think anything different. And of course, if you look at the condition of the descendants of the black slaves in Africa today, again, they're far better off than the people that still live in Africa. If the case was the other way around, then I'm sure they'd be leaving America to move to Africa, wouldn't they? And they're not. They're still coming from Africa to come to America. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.